From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. Or I meet politicians and grafters.
The Media Project is underway, a half hour of commentary and analysis on the news media issues of the week, and maybe even some insight if we're lucky or if we borrow some of the ideas you send to us on email. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, here with my colleagues, Kaylin Brown, professor of journalism at the College of St. Rose. Wonderful to see you.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Thank you to you also. Ira Fussfeld, the longtime publisher of the Daily Freeman and Associated Publications in Kingston, New York.
Yeah, Associated Grocery Stores and whatever else I could be associated with. Yes. Hello. Welcome. Hello.
Wonderful to see you.
Happy New Year as well.
Yes. And far down at the end of the table, a distance away from me, Dr. Alan Shartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio. What are you doing down there?
He sang mournfully from zero to one. It's an old children's song.
That explains it all.
About a dog.
You don't get this media commentary every place.
Okay, what can you do, folks? So we're looking at an interesting Politico piece by Jack Schaefer, who is the media writer for Politico, questioning this. And we can actually talk about it a bit. Who's winning Trump's war with the press is the provocative headline. So, you know, we have a president who looks for every opportunity he can to argue with anything that paints anything he does as less than favorable, and who has defined the media as the enemy of the American people. So how's that going for him as we look at year one?
Well, I appreciate, Rex, that you mentioned that it was a provocative headline on this piece, because I think the word war is problematic. I don't know that there is a war here. If we're going to be literal, as journalists usually are, no one is warring with anyone, though Trump is trying to antagonize the press. And I think that the press is falling into his trap. I think the press sometimes needs to step back and not try to lash back at the president. I think the key is that journalism keeps doing its job. And while the president is trying to undermine the media has to remember its responsibility to adhere to the standards of journalism.
I don't think anybody is winning. Trump, if you go by the polls, is continuing to fall. Most people don't like what it is he's doing, whether it's his attacks on the press or whoever else he's attacking on Twitter. On the other hand, I don't think that there's any question that this drumbeat about fake news and undermining the facts that are being written about him is becoming debilitating. There's a sizable portion of people in this country who do not trust the media anymore. And I think that Trump is responsible for that. But so you have he's dragging the press down with him, and it's going to have implications, I believe, for at least a generation, if not longer.
Here's the problem with Trump. He's a lying liar. And as a result of that, doesn't the press have to call him out on it? So, for example, as we speak today, he was saying that he had had more legislative accomplishments than anybody since Harry Truman. Nonsense. And the press, CNN and everybody else, have got go out and they find out that he's a lying liar. And then they call him out on that. Now, Kaylin, if you had your way, maybe you would turn the other cheek and walk away. But I think it is our responsibility as a community. And by the way, Rex has often pointed out, because he's brilliant, that the media is not one. It is, you know, a lot of different parts. But it's our responsibility to call him out on that stuff. And if that be war, so be it.
But he's laid the groundwork. He's put the first level of lasagna out there that you can't trust what the press says. So that when the press calls him out for being a liar, he will have already left the marker that don't listen to them. You can't believe a word they say.
But Ira, that is classic fascism.
Yes, it
That's
is.
That's the way in which Hitler did it.
You're playing right into Kaylin's point, though. You know, when you say that, because what Kaylin is saying is you shouldn't respond that way, because when you do, you're engaging in the battle, right? You're making it a war?
I think that if journalism keeps doing its job and keeps reporting how the Trump administration is not doing its job, then the truth will be revealed to citizens. So I think that if we keep producing stories that are insightful and require lots of digging and document-based work and multiple fact-checking and try to be as accurate as possible in every instance, then I believe that journalism will continue to hold its ground. And as this president passes, I keep remembering this too shall pass. We're 1 year almost, so we're getting there.
And the great Lee Hayes of the Weavers once said he knows about this because he's had all kinds of diseases, and he knows this too shall pass.
So, but now to defend Alan's point, he would say, but if he is able to, if in doing the serious reporting that you're advocating, if in simply going forward, the president is able to, as Jack Schaefer of Politico writes, nullify every critical story as politically motivated and corrupt, it basically undermines, as Ira says, everything we do.
Yeah, and let's just fast forward. Let's presume that Trump survives this term without an impeachment or any reason that he would otherwise be removed from office, and then loses re-election. Even if he loses it by as wide a margin as the polls currently suggest he might lose it, nevertheless, you'll have roughly a third of the country who will believe that Trump was railroaded out of office by a dishonest, politically motivated press and others, and that will linger into the next term of whoever the next term is. I mean, I don't know where, and as long as there are the Fox Newses of the world and the Breitbarts of the world, that drumbeat from that corner of the world is going to continue. I mean, Carl Bernstein uses a phrase that I think is great, which is he believes we're now in a cold civil war. And I think there's something to say for that.
So those corners of the world you're talking about, Ira, where they're not feeling that the press has been fair to them, We have time now to make a difference there. And I think the media needs to get to those populations and tell their stories and tell them more than any other stories.
Well, that's the optimistic way of looking at it. I think that there is indication that as long as there are those on the far right who would dispute anything that the mainstream or the left media discusses, those people are not, who just don't like mainstream media, are not going to be moved.
Listen, this is very serious. I'm sorry, you know, I kid around a lot here, but this is serious. This is the way in which historically societies get dragged into a autocratic or fascist state. You can look back in history and you can see this is the playbook. And Ira, I think you're right. There is a 30% of this population, and that's all that matters here. He is playing to the base over and over and over again. He figures that's how he got elected, and that's how he's going to get elected again. And by the way, when it comes to the position, because I'm not entirely sure, Caitlin, what you're talking about on this, because editorial pages are always fighting back. They're always fighting back. They have to.
It is true. They are. And people don't distinguish, unfortunately, between editorial pages and the news coverage. And besides, most people get their news from television, which is to the great advantage of the president, because he now has the Fox News Channel, of course, as his 24/7 protective shield, as this wonderful Jack Schaefer.
For that 30%.
For that, 30%, 35%, something like that, that is still approving of his work. Jack Schaefer writes, the network didn't plump for Trump until he became the party's likely nominee, but it was only after he became president that Fox enshrouded him in a 24/7 protective cover, remaking itself indistinguishable from state-run media.
And one of the reasons that what you say is so profound, as always, Rex, is that Fox is the most listened to cable channel of all.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
That's something we have to remember. It's not this little spot that's just out there.
Although, without question, you're right about Fox's numbers compared to the other cable channels. But as we've pointed out before, there's so much media out there and there's so much broadcast media that it's still a relatively small number. It's a large number in comparison to everybody else, but there are still more people collectively watching all of the other programs.
So let me ask you a question, Ira, because, you know, you always say such provocative things. But my question to you would be this. Do you watch Fox on a regular
Very
basis?
Very rarely. I do turn it on to see what they're talking about.
I see my mother's face on the television. She's gone now, but saying almost slapping my hand if I were to reach.
Well, I think it's a mistake if those of us who don't agree with what Fox is doing, either as journalists or from an intellectual point of view, I think it's a mistake if we ignore them. Those of us who are interested in journalism and are interested in news, because we need to see what it is that they're putting out there to have a better idea about what they're talking about.
No, I don't agree with you. I think Fox is mean and evil.
Well, I don't disagree with that, but I think we need to see that and hear it to know that.
Why? I already know it.
But the name-calling is what creates the divisiveness, so there has to be a way around that. Instead of mean and evil, how about kind and good?
What,
and
you think that's what Fox is?
I don't, but I think that we can create in journalism in our lives a conversation where there's not an encouragement of divisiveness.
I think
the choice of language truly matters.
I have called you goody two-shoes in the past, and I'm going to reiterate it one more time.
And I have never called you a name, Alan.
That's right.
Well, there you go. Well, you know, further on Kaylin's point, I mean, she's training young journalists who will primarily, those who go into journalism will be in community settings. They're not going to go immediately to the Washington Post or to the New York Times and cover the White House. And there, maybe there is a chance for journalism to save its reputation if people believe that their community newspapers are actually doing good work. If we have well-trained young journalists doing the work at the Amsterdam Recorder and the Berkshire Eagle and the Saratogian and wherever small newspapers exist, if we have local reporting from WAMC that underscores what's going on in our communities, that really might sustain the image of journalism itself, and maybe that will even translate to the national.
So aren't there some newspapers, some local newspapers, I know one that I'm thinking of specifically, a weekly, you know, in which the editor tells the reporters, you go out and you cover it this way. So what are you thinking? That these reporters, Rex, are able to go in there and say, look up at that editor. They got a kid now. They want a salary, a meager salary. And they look up at the editor and say, no, I'm not going to do it your way.
I've actually never heard of an editor doing that in my career.
Well, then you haven't been around enough.
It's true. I'm not as old. It's true.
Well, I've heard that, but I don't know that I've heard
it. Thank you, Ira.
But I think you're
unlike you to support me.
Well, I know it, and I'm loath to do it. But it seems to me though that the motivation of the editors with whom I'm familiar who have done that was not for an ideological reason. In other words, they're dealing with a young reporter, so we're sending you out to do this feature, and we believe that this is sort of where this feature is going to go, and you might want to look at this. It was a guidance. It was almost a tutoring way to do it, as opposed to, here's the story I want you to write. This is the way it's going to be, et cetera.
Then you've never known an evil newspaper editor.
Well, I have, but...
But the reporter goes out, right, Ira, and then finds out what's the story.
That's right.
And they are aware that this may be a guideline, but it's likely it could change,
yeah,
because the more work you do, the more you realize what the story is.
Right, and then if the reporter is mistaken and comes back with a stinker, the editor will change after all, the editor is the one who's responsible for putting the story in print.
So we've got three apologists for the press here and a realist, me.
It sounds like Donald Trump's formulation,
program,
you know.
In other words,
there are no apologies necessary.
In other words, it's the usual.
Absolutely, no apologies necessary. It's interesting.
Why don't you put your arms around each other and sing Kumbaya?
I cannot sing like Rex Smith, nor would I ever try.
Now that there's a foursome in here, it's three against one instead of
how
two against
that?
One.
You know, it's also the opportunity for like a barbershop quartet, ice cream.
Anyway. Now, I'm sorry. In this Jack Schaefer piece, is this the piece where he also suggests, or is it another one, that the media is overreacting to the Twitter accounts?
Well, I think he has made that point. I'm not sure if he makes it in this piece. Do you think that's the case?
Well, Trump, who Michael Moore has called an evil genius, you know, when he puts out a tweet at 6 o'clock in the morning, he now knows from experience that it's going to largely set the news agenda for the day. And that's what people are going to be talking about all day. And he can not only put out stuff that is provocative, and you can define provocative however you want, but it will then take the focus off of some of these other stories.
Okay,
that
So what's the answer to that?
Well, I think it's an interesting question because I think the critic, whether it's Schaefer or somebody else, is saying we can't ignore it. I mean, it's after all the utterances of the President of the United States. But the question is, should we, every day is the sky falling?
So if the guy tells a lying, lying, lying lie, as he did as we speak here this morning, are you supposed to say, all right, this is the President of the United States, he's being listened to around the world, and we're supposed to say, ignore it? Would you ignore it?
We have an obligation to acknowledge the lie, but not to embellish it, to move on, and then to keep doing the reporting that ultimately will unravel this presidency.
So, Caitlin, if you're running CNN or MSNBC or even the evil Fox, what would you say to the editor, the assignment editor, who has to now decide what to cover that day? You know what your audience wants. They want reaction to a lying, lying liar or not. What would you do?
I don't know that that is completely what the audience wants. I think the audience wants good journalism. So we acknowledge that the lie happened. This was a lie. This lie happened, and discount it and use facts to discount it and then move on.
So one of the interesting facts about all of this is that as the president's approval ratings have slid since he was elected, they're still pretty strong for a guy who's done what he has. And I think they will rise because Americans love success. And so having seen that they actually got a piece of legislation through Congress, the tax bill, regardless of what people think about it, the president's approval rating will rise now because he will be seen as a success.
But that hasn't been the case yet, Rexy.
Not yet. But I
haven't gotten the refunds yet.
There will be, right.
No, that's. I think as soon as people start seeing more money in their paychecks, they'll think more kindly of it.
Well, first of all, it's not a lot of money. And second of all, it's a stinker of a bill, and they know it. And they know the one thing that the Democrats have been reiterating again and again and again, which is this is a bill to help the rich. That is sticking to Trump, and it isn't helping him, and there is no such indication.
So if his approval is still in the tank, the way at a level that no president at this point in the presidency has seen, and the media actually has had some growth. That is, New York Times has added 154,000 digital-only subscriptions in just the last quarter, so they have now 2.5 million digital-only subscriptions. And that's a big deal. That is people who want to read a hard truth-telling about this administration. I think that has really driven it. You've pointed out that the fund drive on WAMC has succeeded in recent months because of Donald Trump, that people are responding to truth-telling that they're hearing on this station from NPR and elsewhere.
Truth-telling as they see it.
Mm-hmm.
There are those people who will not listen to public radio of any kind because they think it's a left-wing-driven anti-Trump organization. I don't believe that that's true, but that's what they think. And that's the divisiveness that we see going here.
Yeah.
But if those stories are shared about people who you say would not listen to public radio, if their stories are shared on public radio, so public radio reports out stories about this disenfranchised group of people and then deploys social media in a positive way to share those stories, there may be inroads.
So let me give you the other side of that story. We have, he does 4 minutes a week for us, a guy named Herb London on every week on public radio. He's a right winger. He's a conservative. He's extraordinarily smart. He's been the head of a major think tank. He's been at NYU as a chair of a department, and he's been at the Hudson Institute and all the other stuff. You have no idea how many people who regularly listen to public radio object to our having this guy for 4 minutes a week on the radio. So what is that about? We have another guy on our panel in the morning named Rich Honan, who is a conservative. And I can't tell you the stuff he's on and the vituperation and the anger. So what we're seeing here is this divisiveness played out in the press. And who will watch what?
It's like putting a liberal on Fox. I mean,
yeah.
I think that goes to the point of the division of
well,
what
they
people
do that.
Like. And
well,
they
do that, but they get themselves a fairly weak sister to
well,
be the liberal.
I might argue that Herb London is a fairly weak sister at that. He's the
Why?
Most boring man on radio. So with all due respect.
Well, I read your editorial page, and I'm not going to name names, but you want to talk about if you're up in the middle of the night and you want read one of those columnists and you got to sleep real fast.
Well, I think they're pretty good, you know.
Of course you do.
David Brooks and
no, he's great.
Gerson and you know, these are good columnists.
Yeah,
I
those are
you.
Good ones.
And our editorials, I think Jay Jochnowitz, our editorial page editor, is a Pulitzer contender. So there you go.
I agree with you. He's excellent.
I wanted to just add.
I'm so sorry to have offended Herb. You know, I feel bad about that. He's actually not a bad guy, Herb London. He's just.
There are people who say that the only reason we have him on is to provide us with cover. In other words, when somebody calls up and says you never have, you know, a right winger on, you have. And I always say, well, what about Herb London? What about Rich Honan? What are you talking about?
I think you're making the prosecution's case.
Exactly right. That is why you have him on.
That is not why I have him on. I have him on to provide balance. What are you talking about?
Well,
you can't have it both ways.
Well, I mean, balance is good, and alternative voices are good, but it is an alternative voice from what's typically heard at WAMC. So, and I don't dispute that that's just the nature of things. There is no similar effort, by the way, on right-wing talk radio to have a balance.
Is Juan Williams still on?
Well, that's Fox, but he's talking about talk radio.
That's true.
Yeah. So, by the way, if you're just listening, you haven't figured out what it is. If you just tuned in for the first time, we
welcome
offer
to the
you
club.
Our
and
apologies.
And you're still here.
That's Dr. Alan Shartok of Northeast Public Radio, Ira Fussfeld, Kalen Brown, and Rex Smith. We are here from the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. If you'd like to comment on this program or on anything else that you hear, we are media@wamc.org. That's right. Write it down. media@wamc.org, and we're happy to hear what you might have to say. We do want to move along to at least one of the topic before we end, and that is something that Ira would be a specialist on, since he began his career before he became a media titan as a sports writer. And this is the
great
question,
distinction, by the way,
about sports reporting moving away from objectivity. This is a phenomenon, isn't it? I mean, this is true.
It is. It's. I think it's a little bit. I don't think it's a new phenomenon. Is that a contradiction in terms of, like, I mean, sports writing, even going back 45 years when I was doing it, had a license to be more subjective than objective, in the sense that when you were describing something that was occurring on the field, you would typically put in your own adjectives if a play was particularly good or particularly bad. I think the phenomenon that we're seeing now is that there is more of a rooting for a specific team approach that is occurring, particularly in broadcast, with the 24-hour-a-day sports channels, and to a lesser extent, I think, in print. But there seems to be a sense that if we're going to be a New York newspaper or a New York media outlet, we better be favorable to the Yankees or the Mets because their fans are who are buying our
programs. Well, what would Professor Brown have to say about that for her student?
Well, I love this because in a sports journalism class I teach, the students are prohibited from wearing fan wear to class so that they understand that wearing fan, this is not about fanboy, fangirl stuff. They come in, they sign up for sports journalism because they love sports. And it all goes back to ESPN.
Yes, but what do you tell them about being fair? In other words, the Ira way is obviously they're responding to their audience and they're doing it for a reason. And what do you tell them? Because, you know, you're always up there trying to show that journalism has to be balanced.
I tell them that, in fact, since the history of sports journalism, there has always been hometown favoritism. I show them evidence of that dating back to the early 90s, that is the nature of sports journalism, which I think is distinct and completely different than the other part of the newspaper.
So it's okay.
It's not okay. It's just a fact. It is the readers of the Times Union have more of an interest in Siena than, say, a Vermont team. And I used to use this example back in the early 90s. The Siena coverage would talk about the fact that certain players played well when the team lost, but the loss would be othered or placed lower in the story. Whereas the exact same story, say, covered by a Vermont paper or the Boston team, depending where, would talk about the win. And it was the exact same game with completely different coverage.
But it seems to me you're apologizing for, you know, you're basically saying it's okay to be non-objective when it comes to sports, but because that's the way it is.
Isn't that similar then to Fox News, because their audience has a rooting interest in the president? And so it's really virtually the same thing.
You'll see it dramatically in print when a local team at Collinger High School goes on to a regional or national event, and the newspaper is not blatantly cheerleading, but it is in the amount of coverage it gives and the route them on, or here we're going to have a full page ad.
In sports journalism, I don't think that it is a question of unethical or ethical when it comes to hometown coverage. Readers of the local newspaper are more interested in reading about the St. Rose Knights than they are the Golden Knights than reading about a team from New Paltz if you're up in Albany.
And
it's
many
just
of
the nature of the readership.
Many of the best journalists in this country started as sports
writers. Well, we're out of time, but I certainly think it's duplicitous. Professor Brown. I do, because you can't have it both ways.
Well, then, the last word actually is Dr. Shartok.
As usual.
Thank you very much. Alan Shartok, Ira Fussfeld, Kalen Brown, and I'm Rex Smith. Thank you for joining us on The Media Project.
Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing.
The Media Project is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Rex Smith is editor of the Times Union. Kaylin Brown is the chair of the Department of Communications at the College of St. Rose. And Ira Fussfeld is the publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman. You can listen to or podcast The Media Project anytime at WAMC.org or just download the WAMC app for your iPhone or Android at the Play Store today. Thanks for listening. That payoff, what a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give 3 cheers for freedom of the press.